Last time, I thought we hit a snag, and I wanted to return to it.
Just a quick review. We were talking about the devil and lifting up the devil. That was on page 320. I think that was okay. The devilish, driven, sometimes hurtful aspect of creativity. And the fact that I think that creativity drives a really creative person against sometimes human values. These artists who are just driven to create. That's the devilish aspect, or part of it at least. So what Jung is doing, he's coming to grips with that fact that he has to be creative no matter what. That's how I understood that. And then that led to the Kabiri. That's the bottom column, 2 on page 320, which was the creative. They're the creative gods in Greek mythology. So that's how I linked up to Satan and Jung's struggling with his own creativity at this point. Then we got into, on the first column on 321, that the Kabiri, so you can say the creative drive, both entangles a person and frees them. Entangles in that usually, or at least at times, the creative drive surfaces as a desirousness in another realm, often sex. And so that of course, is Jung's position. He's caught up in this love triangle. And in that sense, it ensnares you. But in another sense, it frees you. If you work on it, that's your way out of it. So that's how I understood the first column on 321. Now, where we got stuck, I think, is the end of the first part of the second column on 321, where the Kabiri want to be killed. And I didn't feel good about what we said there as I reflected on it. And what I was trying to do was justify that statement. And I'm not sure it's justifiable. That may be something we want to, a question we want to keep open. Now, I'll give you both cases, to justify it and to critique it. Jung was a puer, which means a person filled with creative imagination. The puer is often irresponsible. I have some friends who are puers, and they're always telling you about the book they will write. They have fantastic ideas, but they can never settle down and do the thing. Jung is struggling to be true to his insights and then to do something about them. So if you went back to the front piece of the book, you don't have to, I'll read you what's there. This is what Jung put on the front piece of the Red Book. My entire life consisted in elaborating what had burst forth from the unconscious and flooded me like an enigmatic stream and threatened to break me. So, you see, he makes a distinction between being flooded and elaborating. And I think what he's trying to do here is say, okay, I've got my insight. Now I have to spend my life publishing, documenting, utilizing these ideas. So when he tries to kill his creativity, he's saying to himself, no, don't be one of these guys who always has a new idea and then does nothing about it. That's why he is saying that creativity pulls itself away from you. Because in giving you more ideas, you never settle down to the ones you do have. So that, I think, is what he was trying to do. However, you can never kill creativity. And I think we are seeing here an issue which he has not yet understood. And he has made this decision, I'm going to kill my creativity, but it will surface again in a couple of pages that you can't do it.
Say that again, it will surface that you can't do it?
That you can't do it. What's going to happen is not only has he tried to kill his creativity, he's going to try to get rid of Salome. And he can't get rid of Salome. So his Salome returning is the same thing as his creativity saying, you're never going to get rid of me. And in fact...
What, didn't they say that they wanted him to kill them?
Yes, right. But you can't, I don't think you can do it. So it's a statement I think you can justify from either point of view.
What if Kabir is saying kill us as autonomous as an autonomous entity, acting autonomously within his psyche? He's got to kill that aspect, which is I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
With this great upwelling of creativity, a visionary creativity, one gets the impression the inferior acting autonomously.
But I think they always will. I don't think you can ever link them up to the ego.
But maybe they're suggesting that he needs to have a bit of that, you know.
Yeah, well, I think that's true.
Yeah, I'm just amplifying, I think, what you've said.
Yeah, I think that is true, but he's not going to be able to get away with it.
Well, what if it's just part of a cycle, you know, the Kabiris say, now you kill us so you can manifest.
Yeah.
Then we come back, then you kill us again, and you manifest.
But then we're going to see that what way it comes back is through Salome again, that he can't get rid of her.
Yeah, because... Perhaps he was thinking that way, huh?
I don't know. I'm guessing what was going through his mind is, I'm going to get rid of this damn love problem. And ha ha ha. You know, I've understood what I need to understand, and I don't have to continue in this complicated mess.
So you are equating the Kabiri directly with his love problem as opposed to his creativity involved in the making of his psychology?
Well, I think the same.
Well, I'm sure he distinguishes them somewhat. So.
At this point, I don't think so.
Well, he's got ideas, you know, that we see glimpses of.
Yeah, but he's being tormented to stay true to them through his eroticism.
Through his connection to her.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing another class too, on Swiss artist Peter Burkhäuser. Yeah, he's not known, but just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, remember in the Burkhäuser material how she links up his sex and his creativity. I think it's the same. It's the same thing. Now, I do want to add one thing that we also did a seminar a couple of years ago in the Vision Seminar, and that it's a situation of a love triangle of a woman in love with two men. And Jung, I wouldn't say Jung is encouraging her to see the lover, but he certainly isn't discouraging her from seeing the lover. And people said, you know, why didn't he just say, stop seeing this other person? Or other people have said, but did she have to have the experience with the lover to continue growing? And then there's that statement we talked about where Jung says, sometimes you can solve the problem, or sometimes you have to solve the problem in blood, sometimes you can solve it in wine. By that he means sometimes you have to live through an experience with somebody to get the meaning of what the psyche is pushing you towards. Sometimes you can work it out in imagination. That would be the wine. So I think what Jung is trying to do is say, oh, I'm going to work this out in the wine. And the psyche is saying, no, you're going to work it out in blood. And so that's my take on that statement. It's partially true in the sense that a highly imaginative person has to accept that these ideas come with responsibility. And that's what he's trying to do. I think it's even worse today with LSD and pot, now that pot's getting legalized. You have tremendous fantasies, but then you go to your boring job. You never put the two together. So that's the what he's trying to do. On the other hand, I don't think you can ever do that. And so what you have to do is accept both opposites. I have to live with the source of inspiration, and I have to do something about it. And I can imagine if you're dealing, I don't have anybody like that in my practice, but I do see supervising some people who do see college kids, who are just fantastically gifted. They don't do anything about it. And so that kind of person would say, okay, you've had a dream of the painting, you don't need any more dreams, paint that painting. So I think I wanted to return to that.
Do you think his statements here then on 321, where he says, I am the master of my own self, I serve myself, that he's really trying to justify
yeah.
then killing the Kabiri
yes.
and saying, I've learned it all now?
See, we've already been through that.
Yeah.
If you remember back on 310, mm-hmm. he said how much humility it takes to be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this is the spiral. He's, at one time he understands it, and then it's like, do you remember what you wrote 10 pages ago? But that's the way it goes. So I think the fact that he says that is a clear indication that he's struggling to control himself, even though the whole thrust of this text has been to give control to another process. Yeah. And I'm not sure he ever resolved that until 1944. That was his heart attack. So what we're seeing is this typical situation where in unconscious material, in unconscious material, you both can see a forward movement, and then you can see a loose end of the next challenge. And so I think that's what we're doing. And not to criticize it, because he's done an enormous amount. Linda, this is Doug. Doug's, this is Linda. So that's I think a very important point too, that this pure inflation, I am master of my own self, I admire my mastery, I am strong and beautiful, rich, that's Siegfried. That's the same nonsense. And I don't know if that ever went away until he had his heart attack. Which is the side of him that has set him up for criticism. He probably was a little inflated.
So I'm wondering if that heart attack, what he wrote after the heart attack, wasn't mysterious.
Yeah.
That after the heart attack,
it's pure unconscious depth. All of us, Ion, Joe, Mysterium, Synchronicity. Yeah, I think there's a major shift. And what we're seeing here is the seed. We're seeing the enormous amount he's accomplished, but we're also seeing the seeds of unresolved material that will later be reworked down the road.
So you're seeing here, you say?
Yeah, that when he says, I am master of my own self, I admire my mastery, I am strong. See where he says that there?
We're seeing the issues that he's going to have to work.
Yeah,
Ten weeks or whatever he's been spending with this, he's not dealing with them.
Yeah, right. That's all I understand.
So I have one more question since you brought it up, because this has been on my mind. I'll wait for some reason.
the blood experience and the wine experience, was he the first one to use that, or is that an ancient thought?
I think that's his thought, as far as I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although it's a very Catholic idea.
Is it?
Yeah, you take the mass, you do the bread,
is
the body of Jesus, and the wine is the
blood. Well, and that's ancient then, okay, because it's probably older than
It's Greek and Roman too, yeah.
It's Hebrew, the audion, aleph is in blood.
Really?
Yes. That's Hebrew. That's 4,000 years old.
Yeah.
Well, that's important, because another way you could take this, this is what it means to me personally, is that we become the Mass. And what is transubstantiated in the Mass is something we have to go through personally. And so that we are both the blood and the wine. And what the Mass is and why it's become so destructive is it's a projection of the fact that life requires us to make these mistakes and follow our passions, follow our interests, and then from that get its meaning. And until you have done that, I don't think you can get the wine. I don't think you can get the meaning, because then it's purely in the head. To make it a body, an understanding that you live, you have to have gone through the blood. That's my own feeling.
As in Bonfranc say, somewhere in until you have touched your wildness, something about touching your own wildness, you can never fully individuate.
Yeah. And that's this Christian interpretation of Jung, which is floating around. You see, they don't ever do the blood. They want to get right to the wine. And it's just horrible stuff. They're horrible people.
It's not easy to go through the blood, though.
No,
and
it's not.
And I'm sure by this point, I mean, he's been tormented all along.
It's torment.
By what he's doing to his family, you know, and that's trickling down to his children's lives and who will play with him and whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's struggling with all of
it. Yeah, it is. But this is what he's going through personally, and then I think his interpretation of religion is going to come out of this, that unless we withdraw those projections and live it, religion is the problem. Not the solution.
Is that what you meant when you used the word it's destructive or a little bit ago?
Well, I think the destructive would be the complications that come out of living the blood. Going into an experience out of desire and saying, well, I'll pick up the pieces because I'm not going to miss this experience.
Destroy
the old order. It might hurt some people. I accept the guilt. I will approach as honestly as I can, and I will make reparations for the guilt, but I am not going to miss this experience. You know, I had a person come in to see me, and he said, well, I'm going to do this therapy stuff, but I don't want to go through a transference. And she left. See? I want to have to actually live it. Let's have little cute talks about dreams. She was a psychiatrist.
Maybe in 20 or 30 years.
Well, sadly, I learned then she was diagnosed with cancer. Survived. But, it's serious stuff. Okay. So I just wanted to return to that. I felt we left confused, and I really thought about it, and I realized, well, crazy we are confused. It's confusing. keep that open, keep this open, because I believe we'll revisit it in a couple of pages on another level. Okay, then we got the tower. So that was not too hard to figure out. That was his tower, where he did his work. Outwardly and inwardly, I think, the beginning of his ego strength. We have the poison on the second column.
Where are you exactly?
322. moved over to the first column on 322. The poison, this is all stuff we did last time. The poison would be the fact that the new thing is experienced by the old lifestyle as poisonous, because it has to destroy the old before the new can come in. I think that then takes us to where we stop, which is...
Excuse me, Gary.
Yeah.
What you just said, is that related to what he is saying, I had my own ideas?
Let's see, where does he say that?
It's the middle of that first column. It's the third he, the blue he, third blue he. You have the blue?
No. It's first of all, everything that happens.
It's the third he.
Oh, heaven, yes, exactly. What he's coming to terms with is he is having ideas, and they are, remember, we got to remember, this is Zurich, 1913. They are so contrary to that. I mean, Zurich, 1913 was still pretty much Victorian. It's so contrary to that way of living that... It's experience, his work is experienced by others as poisonous, because it's contradicting the moral hypocrisy and egocentricity of the Victorian age.
So that is the poison, that the new ideas, his own ideas is the poison.
Is the poison,
that's
yeah.
How I was finding
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, he's having an affair, and he realizes that's hurting his wife, certainly, because he's not hiding anything, and that's a poisonous aspect of it, too. And that's his own personal issue, as we've been working with it. Doug, I've tried to see how this is relevant to him, but also how his change is relevant to our society. It's sort of a paradigm of future change. And that anybody who tries to take their instincts and their creativity seriously is going to have to say things that run counter to the normal way of looking at life, and that others will experience as poisonous. Okay, so now we go to Historiated Initial 176, bottom of... second column on 322. I didn't set up my projector because these images now are just red letters and things. I don't think we will get into any more out of the image. Now, I think we actually can go much more quickly in these pages, because on one hand, it's a repeat, and on the other, I think some of what he says is just nonsense. So,
a lot of question marks.
Yeah, I mean, good. I had to work so hard on these pages because I first approached it as what do we learn from it, and then sometimes I realized this is just nonsense, and you can see how it contradicts himself. So we might go a little faster than normal. So those couple of paragraphs is all what we've talked about before. His linking himself up with the devil and with the serpent. And he makes the point that he didn't let himself be overcome by these forces, but he engaged them. And I think that's the whole point of those last two paragraphs. I don't know if we need to read, I don't think we need to read the lines, but he's uniting himself with them, kept them from overpowering him, meaning he heard the meaning of these images in himself. He didn't get rid of them, and he also didn't let them overpower him. So we've already done that. the same, it continues over on first column on 323. I took from the devil the possibility of influence. And by taking the meaning of that aspect of his experience seriously, he integrates the meaning, but also protects himself from being overwhelmed. I build a firm structure, the next paragraph, so that his new point of view is getting stronger. Then he says, I am no longer threatened by the dead. See where I am? Since I accepted their demands. Now, here I think is a typo. I think that should be through. Mm-hmm. I checked the German in the calligraphy. And the German, Carl, how's your German?
Somewhere.
Oh, well, the German says, in dem ich die Schlange aufnahm. And in dem means in that, or by means of my integrating the snake. So that's a very poor translation, as far as I can see. If I were to talk to those guys who work in this book, that's something I'll ask them. But,
where's the sentence again?
See where it says 177, 178. Uh-huh. I am no longer threatened by the dead, since I accepted their demands, though. Think that should be through, but I even think through is a bad translation. It's much more active. See, the German says in dem ich, in which I, die Schlange, the snake, aufnahm, integrate, in which I integrated the snake.
In the next sentence, the word through is used. Would that be, could you look at that in the German?
Well, I didn't do it. The German's tough to figure out because it's calligraphy, but that might be something to check. But I think it's, my English grammar, let me see. Through there is a preposition, right? And in which is a conjunction. So it probably isn't the same word in German, but I can check that. Anyway, it just doesn't make sense, though. So I'm pretty sure that's a typo. Well, the dead. Now, we talked about the dead back on 294 as the points of view that once were alive in antiquity, but which have been relegated to falsehood. Alchemy, for example. Remember that dream where Jung was was digging down, 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 and he came to a lower basement, until he found a bunch of bones. And Freud said, oh, that means you have a death wish against me. And I think what Jung worked out later was, no, those bones are the ancestors. So that if it's, and that appeared earlier where he was about ready to give up Christianity, and then the dead appeared from the past. And he realized, we can't get rid of these things. We can't accept the way they are now either. But those dead points of view, like the medieval point of view, we've got to bring up again and reinterpret. And so that is simply another statement of what we've been saying, that his work attempts to come to terms with past truths that have been disparaged, but he wants to reinterpret them on a new level. Like an atheist would reject the Mass, say. And what he's saying is, no, you can't reject it. You just have to find a new place where it's true, and where it's true is in our inner transformation. So that's what the dead's about. Again, we've already done this, and he's sort of recapitulating to himself what he's been through.
Can it be too representative of, say, the unloved life of our personal ancestors?
Could certainly be that.
Coming back up, too, that you can't just mm-hmm. let that go. That energy wants to move through a family.
Yeah.
And
But that dead, it makes, I mean, unless you have understood how he defines it earlier, it could throw you a little bit. Mm-hmm. But by dead, I think he means dead, or truths that were once living, or in your personal psychology, gifts in your ancestral line that have been squashed.
Mm-hmm.
and we have to reopen those questions. How do we live the Mass? How do we live my Father's unlived artistic talent and so on? So, again, what he's doing is just kind of repeating what he's been working on this whole book. And then how the poison and the dead go together in that middle paragraph. That if you bring up these truths, it is often felt to be poisonous by the existing way of looking at life.
Are truths egos?
Well, in a way, I think he understands values as guiding forces. So truths would be guiding forces that are relevant to us now. And that's what heroes would personify.
Well, we try to kill that so that the next hero, the new hero, can emerge.
Yeah. Okay. And that's exactly what he's doing.
So we kill truth so the new truth can emerge.
We kill an old truth so a new truth can emerge. But when an old truth is killed, we have to go back to it and ask, how can we relive it in a way that is consistent with our new truth?
That's great.
He didn't go through this for nothing. I'm glad you can see it. A lot of people think it's just crazy, but if you really probe into it, there is a logic.
So aren't you talking about consciousness too? That the consciousness that our ancestors had brought us to where we are today to form a new consciousness.
Yeah.
That throwing the baby out of the bath.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, like say superstitions. Oh, let's just get rid of them. But there's often a symbolic truth in one which you can understand on another level. We will discuss that many times. And he takes a couple of shots at Christian morality. The paragraph before HI 179 on 323 of the first column. What he's come up with in later language is the individuation process. And what the individuation process is, we make our own growth the focal point of our life, and that is easily misunderstood as selfishness. It's not, because our individuation process will often lead us to generosity to others, but on the basis of our own destiny. And barring that, the temptation is to do good, but that good is often a power trip. So the danger of kindness not grounded in our own nature is that we force ourselves on others. That's what he's getting to on the last paragraph before the break on the first column on 323. I mean, we've heard all that before, but you can just see how these ideas are surfacing. And that's almost a parenthesis. Well, he's back to the serpent then.
I have a question on the paragraph before there. Well, he feels as if a mysterious poison has paralyzed the living quality and personal relationships. That's just the loneliness that goes with this process.
And, yeah, because it if people find you incomprehensible, you're left alone.
And then the next part of that, the voices of the dead remain silent in the beyond. His life was beautiful and rich since he is himself.
Let me see.
mean, if you weren't related to the voices in the beyond or to other people, I don't know that your life would be that beautiful that you might conceive to.
You think about that. Mysterious presence has paralyzed. While he feels as if a mysterious poison has paralyzed the living quality of his personal wishes, the voices of the dead remain silent in his beyond. The threat, the fear, and the restlessness cease. Yeah. If...
is that him maybe hoping that by this process, even though relationships may be destroyed, you'd be happy with yourself so you'd be okay? Maybe
yes, because the biggest pressure is the voices of the dead. And if you are related to them, you have a strength that counterbalances the loneliness of having alienated people. I think that's what he's driving at. Because if you don't follow that voice of the unlived ideas and talents and so on, then you get hungry. That's why he says, everything that previously lurked hungrily in him no longer lives with him in his day. Because he's integrated the meaning of the past. But, again, I think he will, he wouldn't say that 50 years later. I think he'd say, there is a price of my listening to the voices of the dead. I accept that price, and I make an effort to reestablish relationships based on what I've seen.
And there was a time where he had to give up relationships, but
yeah.
He got relationships that was deeper
yeah.
later on.
Because when he declared himself against Freud, he lost all his friends. Mm-hmm. I think one or two stuck with him. But he was like Mr. He's like the owner of the cult or something like that in his time, you know. And then suddenly, he's nobody.
I think von Franz, he talks about the whole community of the self. And,
yeah.
you know, as you're going through this process, there are those people that will come into your life that will,
yeah.
where you can have the deeper relationship.
Right.
It's so much more meaningful than the superficial that you had before. Even though I'm sure that he would honor what he had to Freud. In his later years,
yeah, but at this time he lost his friends, and that's what he think. That's what I think he's coming to grips
right.
with.
Social standing.
Yeah, I've made this step. I've lost tons of friends. Am I just destroying? Am I sabotaging my relationships? Mm-hmm. I don't think it was clear to him until he began to see a new world come up. Mm-hmm. Because there are plenty of people who do chase people away. By saying stupid things. But he was saying good things and still suffering the loss. And he wasn't sure, am I sabotaging friends or am I bringing something valuable at this point? Okay, so then we go to the next little section there on the first column. Of 323, he's talking to the serpent. And the big point there is the serpent says, life has yet to begin. That's on 323, second column, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down. And then the serpent points out, didn't you feel empty today? Do you call that life? And I think this is an important sentence. I try to put as good a face as I can on everything and to settle for things. So there I think he's trying to say, Tony, get out of my life. I'm going to buck up and go back to my marriage, and I'm going to think positively. This is good cognitive behavioral therapy on himself. I'm going to think differently about this, and I'm going to get on with my life. And we'll see in a moment that doesn't last long. I think the other thing that is important here is when she says life has yet to begin, that is really true. His work hadn't yet started. So that's the voice that's saying you've had all these ideas, you're going to have to spend your lifetime publishing them. And then another good one-liner, the serpent says a little farther down, don't assume that somehow you could ever grasp and embody me. Well, cognitive behavioral therapy says if you think differently, she'll go away. And he's saying, and the snake is saying, forget it. I am stronger than anything you can come up with. And we'll see later, I think that reappears in Salome's tears. So we're seeing here already an answer to kill the Kabiri. And this snake is saying, forget it.
It won't leave you alone. I guarantee
you. It will not leave you alone. It won't. If you're open to emotional depth, it will not leave you alone. And he's trying to be a good guy and get rid of the emotional complications in his life. And they're saying, no, you won't get rid of them.
Well, they're not going to let go of him because there's a purpose.
Right.
If it were, there was no purpose to right. it, he could let go of it.
Right.
Could let go and he would move on to
yeah.
another
entity. That's a nice way to put it. The reason I'm saying cognitive behavior, because I admit my psychiatrist friend of mine, you know, is doing a residency. She's getting trained in CBT, and we talk a lot about it. And, you know, this is the dominant paradigm, I think, in psychology today. Mm-hmm. And it does work, but I like what you say. It won't last if there's a purpose. And probably where it does work is if there's no purpose.
Well, sometimes people just need to get their lives together, and I think in that case it probably is very effective at helping people
yeah.
get themselves all together and to be able to get to work on time and just do the normal everyday thing. But if there's a deeper purpose in your life, and maybe everybody has that, but maybe you need to get yourself together first. Then I think it will just continue, because look at Christiana Morgan, that's
yeah.
from the Vision Seminar. It would not let her go.
Yeah.
Of course, it ended up, she was taken over by it, but...
Yeah.
When you say she was taken over, are you familiar with John Forbes Nash?
The
Beautiful Mind?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That's what happened with him. And I'm just... It's a very psychological thing. The woman who wrote the story about him, I can't remember her name right now, Sylvia Nassau, wrote it's more of a documentary. And he let it take over. He didn't have anywhere to... He didn't have the snake and
right.
Elijah,
right.
the serpent, I'm sorry,
right.
the serpent and Elijah
yeah.
to help him.
Right.
And so he got into this schizophrenic loop of, a closed loop, and it's related to what you're talking about here. It's almost
yeah.
the same thing.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. I don't know about psychology or psychiatrists.
No, what you say is correct. Carl.
Look like you're... Well, I just, you said there's no, it works when there's no purpose. Well, you later said deeper purpose, so I'm
right, there is a purpose to get the person, you know,
yeah.
functioning in
yeah,
life,
right.
but it's the deeper, like in the beginning he talks about, you know, the deeper river, the deeper voice speaking to him. Sometimes people just need to be able to deal with everyday life, and they can't.
The ego building is there.
Yes. And I think in that case it's very valuable.
Well, probably you could apply cognitive behavior therapy to deeper issues too, you know, but you just have to make it bigger terms and bigger symbols, I suppose. I don't know.
It's what you said about get, you've got to be in a box before you can get in the circle and get all over on the circle. I mean, I never thought that probably since I worked with alcoholics. I mean, it's kind of a deeper purpose. I mean, you don't have a place to live, you don't have a job, and you don't have any work. We better let some
Some people are not ready for it.
And I mean, this is judgmental. What do they have? I mean, as a judgmental person, I think, do they have a purpose? I mean, how could this human being have a purpose? So that's a judgmental stance, which is wrong.
It helps us know not what to do, what to not
Just another good one-liner. I give you payment in images. Yeah. Okay. So, we start now a new thread. Salome and Elijah return. And the text says the cycle is completed. I want to look at that for a minute. As I said, Doug, when we got started with this, this is certainly filtered through my understanding. And my understanding has been that the issue is working with is spirit and matter, spirit and flesh, spirit and desire. And so we've gone through all this stuff, and we're back to Salome and Elijah, which I would take as confirmation of my feeling that I track. That what this has been working, all the things we've done since Salome and Elijah have been working back to Salome and Elijah. And he is offered Salome again. And he doesn't want her.
This is a transformed Salome because now she sees, right?
He still doesn't want her.
Yes, but she's transformed.
Yeah, she's definitely transformed. But he is hoping he can slip out of it. And he is not going to be able to.
That's a pretty lame excuse he gives to her that he's already married. I mean, she's an unconscious figure for
there you go.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to tell an unconscious figure you're already married?
Well, I think
I think the whole thing is pretty lame at this point.
Perhaps he's having an inner conversation with Tony. But Tony
grasping
knows.
Or grasping his job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think it's both. That he has got in his mind the difference between Tony and Salome. And he's thinking, because I understand the difference, I can get rid of Tony and keep Salome.
What now?
I can get rid of Tony and keep Salome. I don't have to continue.
You think he wants to keep Salome?
I think he wants to keep Salome, but not have to deal with her through Tony.
So not having the blood.
Not having the blood. Mm-hmm.
Well, you better marry Salome.
That'll be an imaginative experience.
He's hoping he can turn it into imaginative experience. And so Salome is both Salome and Tony Wolf at this point. That's how I take it. And no matter how much insight he has, those two are not going to separate at this point. And he's doing everything he can to wriggle out of it.
I'm not sure I felt really comfortable with what she was actually offering him, adoration. That whole section where she's saying, "Why do you refuse me? I will be your maid and serve you. I will sing and dance, and I will, you know, live on your every word," and all of that. I'm not sure that's a healthy relationship.
No, I don't think it is.
But if you think of it as an animate and an animus, the animus is in service to yourself, but it is also in service to me. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's terribly complicated. Because what she says as an animal isn't necessarily that wrong. If another human being says that, that's sick.
But also, it's sick by the standards of 2013.
Right, and maybe
wasn't
not
accepted at the standards of 1913.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
that's true.
And it's following up on that. It's possible for him to maintain a kind of a more youthful, what we might consider a more youthful view of his anima, or a less developing relationship with his anima at this point. Although he's 40 or whatever now, what would he be? He's still seeing his anima pretty conventionally. In terms of meeting his certain masculine needs that have been repressed and so on.
Yeah. And also, I think the complication is that Salome is both Salome and Tony Wolf. So he's got to get that straight yet.
Tony may have been offering him some of these conventional images.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And yet much more than that.
And yet much more than that. Right.
But she may have been leaving with tea and biscuits.
Or adoration. Yeah, adoration.
Well, and she's appealing to his ego.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does the word "healing" mean in this regard? Pure sex or pure physical relationship isn't healing, is it? Except in the sense of relieving stress, which has a healing effect. But if Salome can heal, if she's part of the soul that can heal, then she's offering a great deal, isn't she?
Yeah, but and the trick here is with creative people, the creative impulse and the sexual impulse are very closely aligned. So when creativity wants a new creation, it will often announce itself through sex. And we understand that now. He had no clue of that in 1913. And even so today, creativity often is done in the context of a relationship. And sex is, of course, not the real big point, but it is one of the things that's drawing her to her. But the real meaning is out of his relationship. We know now in retrospect, I think, out of his relationship to her, Jungian psychology was born. Emma Jung couldn't help him in this. And so it all comes as a big package. And he's having to accept that. I can't create without this woman.
But also, if you're looking at healing with the second unit, is her feeling not you're doing Elijah saying that it is Jung who healed Salome? Salome was blind, and now she sees. It was not the other way around.
Aren't they co-affected? Don't they co-affect one another? The soul isn't by itself, and Jung isn't by himself. They're not objects. They do this. They don't do this, right?
But not yet.
But not yet. So he's still a dialectician at this point? He's still an either or, not a both and.
No. I think he has to go through his eroticism and his creativity are pulling him into this relationship, and he can't separate the one from the other. And he won't be able to do so for quite a few years. Eventually, I think he did. Yeah. Yeah, this is not Sunday school material. Let's take a break.